Hi, everybody. On this last day of August 2021, I can't believe it. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening today. We do appreciate it. We're going down to, I hope everything's all right. We're going to start with that. We're going down to hurricane country. Hurricane Ida hit a couple of days ago down south, as everybody knows, mostly into Louisiana, also into Mississippi. I got good friends who live down in southwestern Mississippi and Long Beach. We're worried about them. Okay, we're going to East Baton Rouge Parish school system today. We're going to talk to Superintendent Cito Narcisi. Then we're going to go over to Selma, Alabama at the same time, talk to Avis Williams, who's superintendent of Selma Schools. All this is part of the AASA Leadership Network. That's what we're going to talk about. And from AASA, we've got Jessica Gordon, so I'm going to talk to all three of these wonderful people. I know the schools are closed for both of our superintendents. They were going to focus after I asked them in a few minutes about how they're doing with the hurricane. We're going to archive the show at ACE-ED.org, ACE-ED.org. That's our American Consortium for Equity in Education, of which Education Talk Radio is the voice of our consortium. And over there, you'll see every podcast that we've ever done and our wonderful award-winning magazine, our online journal called Equity and Access. You'll love it if you take the time to go over there and read it. The experiences of school districts, individuals, and segments of the education system involved in equity and how they're dealing with it. Again, ace-ed.org. You're welcome to join with us. Everything we do over there, no charge. It's free, particularly for educators, and you'll enjoy it. So let me bring on my guests here. I should have done that just a minute ago. I was concentrating on this, and let's see. First of all, we're going to go to Jessica. Hi, Jess. Where are you today?
Good morning. I'm calling in from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, so you're just getting maybe a little rain today.
We have not yet, actually. It is nice and sunny here today in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Good. I'm glad it is. And Jess, welcome to the show, and call me Larry the whole time. Avis, are you there?
Hey, good morning, Larry. Good morning, everyone. I am here, and I am in Selma, Alabama, and lots of rain. Yeah, but we are safe here.
You are safe. And schools are closed today because of the hurricane, a just-in-case thing, right?
That's correct. Yeah, our governor did call a state of emergency, so closed yesterday and today.
Good enough. Okay, better safe than sorry. We can always make up that time. We got a year to make up, so we're going to make up that time, and no problem. I'll be back to you in a minute. I want to talk to Cito over in East Baton Rouge. Cito, you're in the heart of it in Louisiana. How's the hurricane? Or what's left of it, or whatever. Everybody, Superintendent Cito Narcisi, and Cito, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right.
Yeah, that's correct. Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning? Yeah, we just the hurricane just passed us, so we're assessing damages right now.
Okay, you think it doesn't look just anecdotally with your eyeballs?
Yeah, we're actually just today we've. We had a clear, just started a clear day. We're actually going into buildings. We have a lot of power that's out in the city still. So just trying to work through all those areas.
Yeah, and I used to live in Florida, and I sat through five hurricanes. And people think that the hurricane aggravation is the day that the hurricane hits, and that's bad enough. Believe me, I don't wish that on anybody. But CNN and the Weather Channel move on fairly quickly, okay, and not a single red light works, no electricity. It's hot in Baton Rouge, no air conditioning. Okay, I wish you the best, my friend, okay? I really do, you and your whole city.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're working hard, and as we say, Louisiana strong, so.
They are indeed, okay. And would you think it'll be school on Thursday? Will you be able to do it? I know you're closed tomorrow.
It's hard to make the call right now. We actually said no school till Wednesday, but we, biggest problem we have right now is electricity. We had about 175,000 homes that didn't have electricity yesterday. We're down about 100,000, so we're also trying to rush because, we have to feed kids, and, we're in a heat index today, so just have a lot going on.
I just hope everybody's safe and it'll all come together. You guys know the story, but everybody, I wish you well. That's not just my two wonderful guests from down south, but also my three wonderful guests from down south, including Jess, all right? But also everybody listening down there, if you can be listening down there, I hope eventually everybody hears this. It's really good. Jessica, we're talking about the Urban Superintendents Academy from AASA. My good friend, a big shout-out to Jimmy Minicello, their director of communications, for putting the show together, as he always does. Talk about the Urban Superintendents Academy, and I want people to know it's a partnership between AASA, the Superintendents Association, the great Howard University in D.C., and USC's Rosier School, okay? And why you partnered that way, okay, and how this whole thing comes about. And again, your program manager in the Leadership Network for AASA, Jessica Gordon.
Yes, thank you so much, Larry, for having me, and good morning, everyone. Yes, the partnership began over 7 years ago between AASA, Howard, and USC. They decided to come together to offer opportunities for educational leaders across our nation to become involved in a network of support, mentoring, professional development, and all related to the challenges and opportunities facing our 21st century urban leaders.
Okay. Yes. Are you still there?
I can give you more. Yeah. So
I want more. Yeah, I want more. Everybody wants more. Go ahead. Yeah. Tell me about it. How's it worked out over the past 7 years, et cetera? Yeah. Talk about it.
Yeah, so it has been absolutely wonderful. We provide both programs. We provide mentors who are current as well as former urban superintendents to our participants. We have coursework options at Howard as well as USC interested in pursuing their doctoral degree if they don't already have one.
Mm-hmm.
We have a center, both universities have a center for research and discussion around urban school districts. We also provide career counseling and coaching to our participants. They have internships. And when we were in person, there were some field experiences where we had opportunities to visit each other's school districts, as well as attending national conferences together.
Yeah.
And those connections, I mean, truly just, they thrive. People are definitely still connected to those that they went through the academy with.
Right. It's so important. And actually, you bring up a very good point, that networking, okay, is so key. Nobody's in this alone. Everybody's got the same aggravations, and everybody can share in the successes, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And that's really the purpose, okay, of the Superintendent's Academy, to make sure that you create this network, and they in turn create a network that makes sense. Hey, Avis, tell us about – thank you, Jess. Tell us about Selma, Alabama Schools. Describe the district to us, Avis Williams, Madam Superintendent. Okay,
sure.
And just tell us your thoughts on the Urban Superintendents Academy. And I must ask you something. The word urban always drives me nuts. The word urban always refers to big cities, if I may, a big urban area. That's
right.
What I love to say.
Right.
Okay, it's become a euphemism, if I may, for people of color. Okay, that's the other way it's described. All right, and for some reason, it makes me a little nuts when we kind of avoid terminology like that. What are your thoughts when you hear Urban Superintendents Academy? What's that mean to you, urban, in this case?
Yeah, so I definitely think it's tied to black and poor sometimes, way too often. And sometimes it's about population and size. And I do think that when you think about the difference between urban and rural, regardless of your definition, the challenges are different. And I am in Selma, Alabama, and I'll tell you a little bit about Selma and kind of connect the dots here a bit. So we're about 45 miles south of Montgomery, which is the state capital of Alabama. And I consider us a rural area location-wise, you know, meaning we don't have a highway, you know, a state highway that is close to us, or an interstate, rather, that's close, that passes through Selma. And our population is less than 20,000 in the city of Selma. Our student population is just under 3,000 scholars, and we have eight brick-and-mortar schools and one virtual academy. And my scholars are predominantly Black, and Selma is a very high poverty community. But unlike a lot of communities that would be considered rural, rather, we have a lot of problems that people would consider more urban, such as gang-related problems, violence, and poor health outcomes that are related to the poverty and that sort of thing. And so the Urban Superintendents Academy was attractive to me because it was focused on making sure that we were pulling people into the superintendency that don't necessarily look like me. I am a Black female, and, you know, I can speak anecdotally, and Jessica can probably can give you more statistics, but anecdotally speaking, when I walk into a room of superintendents, I don't see a lot who look like me. And the Urban Superintendents Academy is hyper-focused on changing that narrative and making sure that our schools are led by people of color and more women. And the networking, the coaching, and just having experts who have sat in the seat to be able to guide through the process of either securing a superintendent job if you don't already have one, or really honing in on those skills for those of us who are already sitting superintendent. And that experience was invaluable to me. And at the time when I was in the academy, I was just in my second year as a superintendent. And so I certainly relied on the learning and the guidance that I received from that network.
Right. It's so important. You said so many important things, and I love the way you call your students scholars. I think that's wonderful. Okay. It puts out, and you, I know you're being rigorous with them, which is great because they are scholars. Okay. That's very, very important. That's a big distinction. The other thing is, in a mostly female profession, education, a predominantly female profession, there are the number of superintendents doesn't match the demographics of the profession, okay? And it's an important thing if you were the kind of the if you look at the role from you know that perspective, it's different. And needless to say, African American, Latino, etc., is incredibly important. I must ask you, you're 20 miles or so away from Montgomery. I have to ask because this is on our bucket list. Bryan Stevenson's Museum in Montgomery. Have you ever been there?
Oh, numerous times, and I've actually met Bryan Stevenson. He's a phenomenal man, and that's definitely a great learning experience. Scholars have gone there for field trips, and highly recommend it for anyone who's visiting the area.
Yeah, and if you want to understand that, everybody, it's they call it the Lynching Museum, but it's a lot deeper than that. It's a history of that horror of our history. But Bryan Stevenson, just look at the movie, which is great, or the book, Just Mercy, and you'll learn an awful lot about him, okay? And it's stuff we have to take into consideration with everything. It's just so darn important. Okay, Cito, as we talk about all these things, put it from your perspective in East Baton Rouge. How long have you been superintendent? Describe the district and talk about your experience with the Urban Superintendents Academy in East Red Stick, Louisiana, Baton Rouge.
Yeah,
Baton Rouge.
Yeah, Baton Rouge is the state capital of Louisiana, about 1 hour from New Orleans. About 41,000 kids here. Similar to Selma, you know, a very urban district. You know, when people talk about urban, we just talk about mostly the characteristics, you know, high poverty, Black and brown kids. We also have white students as well, but the poverty rate and a lot of different type of issues are pretty similar. I think, you know, my experience has been, and I was fortunate enough to get my superintendency while I was in the program, which was kind of great, you know, because I was able to connect with a lot of different colleagues in the cohort. Yeah. We had, you know, we had existing superintendents as well as folks who were just coming up. I was coming from Washington, D.C., before I came here, and I just felt it was really fortunate because the type of experiences that I got to engage with, like case studies, and I mean, even till this day, I still talk to some of my colleagues from the same cohort who are in other cities around strategies on how to, you know, better support our kids or try to move the academic work for our most struggling students.
You know, as you, I'm going to use the word, I'm going to hate it, urban. As you look at your urban students, okay, just too nebulous, goofy a word, I just don't like the way it describes things, okay. As you look at your students, Cito, what are the specific things that you would describe a student or scholar in an urban school needs that would be different from some other school, suburban school, whatever you want to put? What are the differences?
I think some of the challenges could be from things that range from the amount of children that you have that are from poverty, have high poverty, to children that don't have as much access, and also living in different dynamics in the city. I mean, you know, you have and have nots, and I mean, although that could be similar in a lot of different communities, but you know, there's always, I think, a level of always an additional level of challenges around trying to provide students with a specific type of services in particular communities. And I think that those are kind of where the characteristics are different. I mean, I do think, you know, from district to district, you may have some of the similarities of poverty and all those things, but, you know, I just think there's always an additional dynamic to it, right? Whether that's through race, or whether that's through class, or whether that's through, you know, just access every day, or whether that's through, you know, coming from a much more challenging background at home. I mean, you know, so I think all of those kind of elevate those different type of levels. And so I always see it more of a characteristic, but not to say that other folks don't go through that, but those are mostly...
No, it's different. That's the whole point. There's a difference.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
There
is.
Okay, and you articulated that perfectly. And I wonder, since we're on the subject of urban, there's a big difference between where you came from, Washington, D.C., a huge city, okay, versus Baton Rouge, all right? As you put the two of those and compare them, what do you see as the difference in the two schools, school districts, excuse me?
Yeah.
Of course, size is one, yeah.
Yeah, although they're both capitals, right, you know, a big difference that you see between Baton Rouge and Washington, D.C. is just, like, give an example, as simple as transportation, right? We don't have a robust subway system here, so families mostly use, public transportation, or they drive if they can even afford a car, right? And so that alone provides and challenge around access, right, for kids to have opportunities for programming, or, you know, going to do different things, after school programs. So, you know, we have to figure out how do we solve that from a transportation standpoint. Where in D.C.,
wow,
you know, we give a child a car to get on the train, they could do that. Right? So, you know, so those are some of the differences in terms of how the cities function.
Yeah, and where are you from? Are you from big city or little city or what?
Yeah, I grew up just outside New York City, so...
Never heard of it. Never heard of it.
Yeah, it has its own dynamics, but...
yes, there's a difference between there and good old Baton Rouge, okay? And it's a nice difference, okay? There are wonderful things about both places. Avis, where did you grow up? Where are you from?
I'm actually from Salisbury, North Carolina. So, Jessica, you're not too far from my old stomping ground.
There you go.
And I joined the Army out of high school, and that's how I landed in Alabama. So most of my career was in Huntsville, Alabama. But I did move home to serve as a high school principal in Salisbury, and then worked in Guilford County in North Carolina also. I lived in Kannapolis, Jessica. You know where Kannapolis is?
Absolutely.
It's, ladies and gentlemen, it's North Carolina Old Home Week here on Education Talk Radio. Okay, that's great. And as you look at Selma, okay, Selma, Alabama, which is a city, okay, we all know Selma, okay, what are the challenges that you face, particularly urban-wise? Again, I'm using that word. You can use any word you want. Yeah.
Right, so I would absolutely say the high poverty, the crime. You know, there was a time where Selma was listed as the most violent city in Alabama, and we even made the top 10 per capita for the nation.
Jeez.
And you know, right now we've had more murders this year. Yeah, we've had more murders at this point this year than we did for the entire year last year, and that's been the case, you know, for the last couple of months, actually, that we beat last year's record back over the summer at some point. And so I would definitely say that is one of the characteristics that people traditionally tie to urban areas. And I would also say just some of the access issues that my scholars have, you know, high quality housing, And, you know, even some of the health care is not as robust here that it might be in some other areas, larger areas in particular. You know, but I think the thing that makes Selma unique is that we've got those challenges, but we don't have the resources. I know Nito mentioned, like, having public transportation and that sort of thing. You know, a lot of our scholars' families don't have cars, and we also don't have public transportation. And, you know, so those access issues are part of the barriers and challenges that our families often face, that as a school system, we try to do our best to connect with community partners to make sure that we're closing that gap and standing in that gap so that our scholars and families do have the resources and support that they need.
And you know, we all got into this profession, education. That was what we thought about, education. Mm-hmm. We're going to educate these kids. We're going to learn pedagogy. We're going to know how to operate chalk on a blackboard, whatever the case may be. All right?
Mm-hmm.
But look how that has developed, especially with the pandemic, okay, into literally immersing yourselves into the children's lives, okay, and understanding what your kids and their families need, okay, and you have to work the district from literally the grassroots of the community up. Okay, right into the school district, both of you. Okay, and basically every superintendent out there. It's just wild. I must ask something, and it's very hard to find a workforce these days. And I'm just curious, Avis, I'll stick with you post pandemic in an urban school district. Okay, how are you doing staffing wise and all that sort of thing? Because my nephew is a principal in a district in Massachusetts. Okay, and they can't. This year, they cannot find enough custodians or school bus drivers. Speaking of transportation, okay, this is just north of Boston. All right, so what's happening in Selma? Then I'm going to ask Cito the same question.
Yeah,
we're staffing up. Yeah, this year.
Absolutely a challenge. You know, there's a national teacher shortage, so you know we're all grappling with that challenge. You know, and then when you think about an area where you may not be able to attract and retain young professionals in the first place, and then when you're trying to do it in a field where there's already a shortage of qualified people, you know, that's a major challenge. I'm really grateful for the emergency certificate route that we have available. And I'm a firm believer that if you love children and you want to serve and you're committed to doing this work, I'm not biased if you did not go to what I call teacher school.
Yes.
You know, because if you have the heart for it and you've got those qualifications that give you the ability to pursue an emergency certificate, then we welcome you with open arms to be a part of Team Selma. And that's what we've had to do. You know, we've had to be flexible and do that. And then we also have a strong partnership with Teach for America. Love our core members from Teach for America because they do bring a level of diversity in terms of their backgrounds. And, you know, that we get them for at least 2 years, but we do have some that will stay beyond the two-year obligation.
Fabulous.
And I've heard people say, well, gosh, you know, you only get them for 2 years and then they're gone. And you know what? I would rather have these dynamic, passionate
Absolutely.
People for 2 years than to have someone who's just there and you know, had retired 10 years ago and forgot to go home.
Most of them,
when they leave, when they leave us, it's because they're going to law school at Yale. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we're talking about brilliant people who just want to serve. And so that's been an amazing
And do the right thing for a while,
us.
And that's okay. Speaking of Brian Stevenson, okay, kind of the same thing. They serve well. Cito, what's going on staffing up this year with teachers and staff?
Similar to what Avis said, you know, we have all the same type of partnerships, you know, whether it's through TFA or we've also partnered with our local universities. I mean, I have Southern University and LSU in my backyard, and so we've been providing early contracts to them before teachers even graduate. So they can be able to come through and also partner with the state around alt certification. I think the biggest push we've also been trying to do has been to grow your own. So partner with the state around getting folks who are currently paraprofessionals in our school system who want to become teachers And also, you know, we have a lot of different folks in the system that want to be teachers, but they don't know how to. I mean, we have about 6,000 employees here, so we've been trying to push that. I mean, there's nothing like trying to get someone who's already invested in their own community to give them more access. I mean, interesting, you talked about how the ASA and Howard cohort, I mean, I spoke to this idea came when I was talking to another one of my cohort members who were with me in another city as a superintendent. We were talking about what the strategies were in their city and how we can compare it over here. So, you know, those were kind of the ways we're trying to, you know, strategically think through on trying to solve some of these problems.
Yeah, and you will think it through. Okay, we'll all correct, et cetera, et cetera. It just takes time and thinking outside the box. So let me go back over to Jess. Jessica, you hear all these people. What do you teach these bright people at the Urban Academy this year? What'd they learn? Jess, who's a program manager at the Leadership Network. Jess.
Yes, I'm just so pleased to even be on the call today. You all, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
you. Hello. Okay, yes. So I'm just so pleased to be on the call listening to Avis and Cito and hearing more about the things that they are doing. When she mentioned North Carolina, I'm actually born and raised in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and my grandfather served in World War II, came back to Fort Bragg, and you all, my schooling, you know, we just never left Fort Bragg. And so grew up in Fayetteville, North Carolina, taught in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Came to Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools and was an instructional technology specialist as well as a director for leadership development for all principals and assistant principals and central office staff. So definitely we got into this work for the same reasons, and the work is rewarding and challenging. So just pleased to be on the call. But you to talk about the program.
Pleasure to have you.
I just love the connections that I have an opportunity to see happen. It has been a bit challenging. As we know, the pandemic has made things very different, us being virtual. But both programs are led by our AASA's Associate Executive Director, Dr. Mort Sherman.
I know, Mort. You tell him I said hello. Tell him I remember when he was superintendent in residence and watch him laugh. Just say, Larry wants to say hello to the superintendent in residence. I guarantee you he will laugh. That's Mort Sherman, everybody. You go ahead.
Larry.
Yeah.
I will.
Do that. Larry Jacobs says hello to the superintendent in residence. Just go from that. He'll laugh.
I will go from that. And so our Howard program is supported, of course, by their School of Education. We're very grateful to Dean Don Williams and Dr. Sean Joseph, who's also a professor at Howard University, Dr. Sam King, Tracy Davis. And so for our USC program, it is led by their School of Education and Dr. Maria Ott, as well as Dr. Allison Leggett. And so our programs begin in August of each year. So we just had our kickoff last Friday, which was exceptional, and I'll touch on that a little later. And we meet monthly until May. So each academy or cohort meets from August until May. We do graduate our participants, and they have an opportunity at receiving certificates or any type of credit from the university as well. But both programs truly build champions for students across our country to ensure that our students are supported and getting the best education possible. We have a steering committee, which includes representatives from the Council of Urban Boards, the National Superintendents Roundtable, the Association of Latino or Latinx Administrators and supervisors, and the goal is to prepare the superintendents for the demands of the urban. I know we talk about urban, but of the environment, and it's just challenging. And also, Avis mentioned this, addressing the reality that less than 5% of our nation's superintendents are persons of color. And so we at AASA, Howard, and USC understand that. It's important for us. We know that. We know it's important for students to have teachers that look like them. And it's also important for them to have, to have those leaders that look like themselves. It's true.
You know, I don't know. Maybe you know this. You just brought up that statistic. Maybe one of the superintendents knows. What percentage of American students in public schools are kids of color? Cito, do you know?
I actually have that number.
You do? Go for it.
I have that number.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so in the U.S., our minority enrollment for students is over 54%.
And what's the number of superintendents again? Wait, what's the number of the percentage of superintendents?
Less than 5% are persons
less
of color.
Less than 5%, but over 50%. Oh, my God. Wow, that's kind of says it all in a nutshell, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. Wow, talk about it's pretty amazing. Okay, I got to tell you, that's amazing. So you're going to stay in touch with everybody just through the whole most of the school year, right? And keep them going and keep them networked and all that sort of thing, right?
Absolutely. So we keep them connected. We bring in the National School Board Association because we know
they're great.
With the things that are currently happening, we have to make sure that superintendents and those school boards have those opportunities to build and be able to work together collectively to ensure that we are focused on our students. And so throughout the year, we have different speakers that come in from different organizations. Last week, at our Urban Summit, we had a great success. Nicole Hannah-Jones actually allowed us to interview her, so she just became a dean over at Howard, and she's the author of the 1619 Project, and so she challenged everyone at the Urban Summit.
Thank you. Yeah, I could, you said the name,
Pulitzer
I couldn't think of it.
Winner.
Yeah, thank you, yeah.
Yeah, Nicole Hannah-Jones, yeah, so she kicked off a part of our Urban Summit, you all, and she challenged all of us to walk in our roles with courage, and we just got great feedback. We also had Erin Jones of Washington State, and she kind of did more of a storytelling piece, but really encouraged all of the leaders to be able to lead this year with their heart and be able to consider putting our students first, as we already do, but because of, the global pandemic that's happening, racism, the different polarizing events and opinions that are taking place, really encouraging our leaders to lead with their heart. And we'll do that throughout the entire year where we bring in people.
So important. And, you know, it brings to mind every school district this year seems to be highlighting social-emotional learning. All right, and that's almost everybody I talk to. You know, equity is always at the top of mind, but social emotional network learning seems to be the focus this year. And I'm just curious, when you hear lead with your heart, okay? I'll go to Avis. Avis, that social emotional learning. Am I in the right place for some of the schools?
Oh, absolutely. We have an emphasis on social and emotional learning. In fact, we're using this opportunity with the pandemic and with the additional federal funds that we're receiving to relaunch our strategic plan. And we're adding an area called safety and wellness. And the safety piece includes physical and emotional safety. And we were already prioritizing SEL even before the pandemic. We had what we called a self-care mobile unit because SEL is for our team members as well, where central office staff will go to each school with a self-care unit to give teachers duty-free lunch and feed them, and then they would just have a chance to relax with lavender scents and adult coloring books and that type of thing. And now all of our schools have self-care rooms instead of teacher lounges. So when we think about SEL, we think about the entire staff, all of our team members, and
good
not just
you.
Our scholars and families.
Good for you.
But we do also have a child psychologist on staff and a mental health coordinator on staff, as well as each school has an SEL team to support the needs that our scholars have, and especially around trauma. We make sure that we have trauma-sensitive classrooms so that we're meeting those needs, even going as far as making sure that we have data points. We have an SEL assessment that we use to get pre- and post-data so that we can determine engagement beyond just from an academic standpoint, and then also just really make sure we're intentional about the supports that we're providing. And with wraparound services as part of that as well, and some of that is through our our school-based mental health partnerships, and you know, some of it is in conjunction with our parent university, where our family engagement specialist connects directly with families. And then, you know, as needed, we establish new partnerships that can support us, including some of our faith-based partners and other nonprofit and civic groups that are willing to help and to support.
Right, that's great. And I must ask the always amazing question, Avis, I'm going to ask Cedar the same thing. Was Mort Sherman nice to you? Was he nice to you? Because if he wasn't, you tell me, I'll get one of them.
I would say, for the most part, no.
He's a lot like Captain Ahab. You got to be careful. He's a lot like Captain Ahab on the peak one. You got to be really good. Cedo, was Mort nice? Before we get into asking you, was Cedo nice to you? I just want to make sure. Was Mort nice to you, Cedo?
Say it again. Right?
Was Mort nice to you, Cedo?
Yes.
Was he nice?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Good. He's got a real mean streak. Tell him I said that next time you see that. Oh, just unbelievable.
He's great. Everybody
great.
On the team was great. Yeah, they have great support, too.
He's the best. I got to tell you. So just talk about this, because to me this is really important, because we're talking about families and people, you know, in a lower socioeconomic position in some cases. SEL, how are you handling that, leading with the heart this year?
Similar to Avis, I mean, we've been putting a lot of different things in places. For example, we've added more nurses, social workers, and also a lot of different community partners to come to the table to help us to figure out what we need to do. What we've kind of learned here in Baton Rouge has been, you know, not only our kids have been needing support, but also our adults. I mean, as you can imagine, even this hurricane that just passed by, it's been a huge trauma for everybody. I mean, we've dealt with here in Baton Rouge from a flood in 2016 to, you know, you had another hurricane, and I mean, just folks are just going through it, and so if, you know, if the adults can't be in a good place, they can't help the kids at all. So, you know, we've been working through that, and also, we've worked with a group called the Castle Foundation
that's been really working with us with
all of our social emotional learning and doing some practices and those things. We've also been trying to create a system called multi-tier system of support, which is where you you take academics and also social emotional interventions, and you blend them together to kind of be able to help kids identify where their challenges are, so you can kind of be proactive to their challenges before they are actually having problems. And so we've been really working hard on trying to create those type of systems. And I think the last part I would say, which is probably similar to what Avis was sharing, is like you can't underestimate community partnerships in this process. Similar to what Avis said, you know, just the other day I met with 200 ministers across our city trying to talk to them about how they can support their children in their churches with their parents on what to do in terms of helping to support and navigate through our system. And so, I mean, those are all kind of the complex strategies you have to kind of think through in order to kind of get through all these complexities we have.
You know, you are literally, both of you, okay, community leaders, okay, and it's your job to bring all the forces of the community together to educate these kids and move them on. The Urban Superintendents Academy shares ideas like this all the time, and for anybody who is a superintendent, who wants to be a superintendent, please, it's really important, AASA's Urban Superintendents Academy. We got to go. Jess, you're wonderful. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us. And if anybody needs more information, thank you so much for having us. And if anyone needs more information, we can be contacted at AASA.org.
You got it. That's great. And Avis and Cedo, please be safe down there with this stinking storm and the stinking pandemic. Take care of yourselves and all those kids.
Yep, thank you so much.
Thanks a bunch.
You're welcome, both of you. Stay safe. Good luck restarting school, okay? Take care. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, great people, aren't they? It's incredible. AASA.org, the Urban Superintendents Academy. You can define urban however you want, okay? I just hate that euphemism, all right? Anyway, it's Cedo Narcisse from East Baton Rouge, Avis Williams from Selma, Alabama, the two superintendents, and Jessica Gordon, AASA Leadership Network Program Manager. Check it all out. Me, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We're the voice of the American Consortium for Equity at ace-ed.org. Go over there, check it out, see what we do. Enjoy your magazine. Next show's in September. Thanks for listening.